Well, good evening, ladies and gentlemen. It's really an honor to add to your ideas and sort some additional arguments. And I have to confess that I was just informed in the taxi from the train station to this wonderful place that I have to deliver a speech in English. So please don't criticize me for this. After such a brilliant English we learned before, and then this German-English. But I always mention to my friends in Africa that this is a price the British have to pay for the globalization of their language. They have to overcome my German-English as well. Nothing is for nothing, even the globalization of a language. And by the way, I was also asked to add some consideration with regard to climate and adaptation to climate change in the context of Africa. Maybe that you are aware that I had the chance to serve for a little bit more than 8 years in the huge hierarchy of the United Nations system, responsible for the environment policy of this great organization. And even better, this location, this institution, UNEP, is indeed headquartered in the middle of Africa, in Nairobi and Kenya. And I again and again repeat that when I was asked by Kofi Annan to take over this responsibility, quite a number of friends came and said, great to be responsible for the global environment policy, but in Nairobi? And indeed, coming just from a ministerial responsibility in lovely Germany, after a long, long life in politics, you learn in the second when you are far away that you are poisoned in politics as others are poisoned with alcohol. And you need a time to be depoisoned. And then you are depoisoned in the middle of Africa. And you have to learn a new language, you have to learn a new thinking, and you must be aware that the best decision ever done by the United Nations General Assembly was the decision to bring this institution to Africa. It's by far the best location. Not only because of the fact that the absolute majority of people in this world, now 7.3 billion people, are not living in Freiburgs or Berlins or even Paris, set aside New York, they are living in Nairobi's. And they are living under their condition of life. They are confronted with the challenge to overcome poverty in a much more direct sense of this word. Yes, also in our society, we have a lot of topics to solve. We have a huge rift in our society, and we all know that this is increasing and not decreasing. Only to make a footnote for the situation we are quite now in these days. Nobody really is protesting against the fact that the European Central Bank is buying the debts in this quantity, making a rush to those already rich people in this country and abroad and making the poor even poorer than they were before. We must be aware of those consequences, only to mention it. The stock exchange is always new records. There's nearly no day where it is not going higher and higher. I learned that in Germany, some 6% of the population are shareholders of those companies. Where is that all going? I recommend very strongly to read this book of Professor Steig, Gekaufte Zeit. He is the head of the Max Planck Institute for Social Sciences in Köln. And he underlines that this is a development which cannot be without reaction. He quotes in his book Alan Greenspan. He was asked who should be the next president of the United States of America in this election campaign with Al Gore. And he added, he answered, it makes no difference. In the globalized world, these are market forces making the world running. So there is no difference. We are really in a challenge if we are going back to Africa in this field as well. Africa. Are we aware that the time of colonialism in Africa is gone only some 50, 60 years ago? We celebrate 25 years of reunification in Germany. Double the time is the end of colonialism in Africa. In my country, in Kenya, the Mau Mau activity was at the end of the 50s. End of the 50s. And without any doubt, the precondition for development were not the best for Africa after overcoming colonialism. If we have a little bit more detailed view on this field, you learn very soon that there were the economic reasoning in the colonial powers that they decided to go out of colonialism, not respect to human rights or what have you. It was simply too expensive. And these are the situations where we are changing our lifestyle in a way that we are externalizing lots of cost of our living. I remember only some months ago we had the summit on climate, I believe Ernst Urich was there as well, invited by Ban Ki-moon, heads of states in numbers. I was also able to participate, not as head of state, but nevertheless, I was there. And I listened to the president of Uganda, Museveni. For sure, not a real democratic person, to say the least. And he started with a narrative, and the narrative is all very, very necessary in our days. You have to have a narrative. His narrative was very easy and say, look, if I'm in my country in Uganda, I have a wonderful farm, and I have a fence around the farm. If my neighbor comes and throws his garbage over my fence, I go to the neighbor and say, please, my friend, tomorrow, that's back. Otherwise, you have a problem. And he added, exactly that's what you are doing to us. You throw your waste over our fence and expect that we have to handle the consequence of this. Therefore, it is not by chance that in the Rio Summit, 1992, it was decided in the Rio Principles that there is a common but differentiated responsibilities for what is happening here. So if we consider what is to do with regard to climate change and the consequence of this, we cannot come back and say, their problem. No, it is our problem. And if we want to have a peaceful world, going to up to 9 billion people always in the middle of this century, and ladies and gentlemen, the middle of the century, that looks like in a very long way. I always repeat that my youngest granddaughter will then be something like 30 years and something. Then it is the year 2050, and then we have 9 billion people roundabout. Don't criticize me for 100 million up and down. To remember, we have only 80. Quite now, we have per year something like 70, 75 million people more on this globe, mainly concentrated in Africa and mainly concentrated in the Indian subcontinent. Not in the Germanese, in the Japanese, or whatever. We have exactly the opposite problem, and we have a problem to solve this in solidarity with those having young populations. It's great to see that this continent suffers with regard to the fact that we are externalizing costs of our living to them. I once mentioned that this is ecological aggression, what we are doing. It is an ecological warfare. They have to handle the consequences that we cannot do it at home. And this gives me the question back, mentioned also in this. Yes, we have these problems externalized in a region where the colonialism heritage is still very, very clearly available, not as an excuse for doing not the right things now, but as a basis for this. Only to mention that we have still what we call as an economic fact, the very, very difficult and very disfortunate terms of trade of Africa concerning the developed countries. Africa is exporting raw materials. And all the value added, they are creating the jobs. I come from a region in Germany, in Lippe. I have no idea how to translate this in English. A little teeny weeny, but a very concentrated region for furniture production. And I made a mistake as a politician in this region because I mentioned it would be very necessary that we make the products in Africa where they harvest the logs and not to export the log to produce those topics here, to bring the value added back and to create jobs there. That is a reason for development. Was not very favorable for me, to say the least. It was, of course, a question, but it costs us jobs. Yes, then we have to consider how can we go on in a better way. But if we go in this direction, that we have always terms of trade that they export those products which are very low in their value added, not creating jobs and not creating really income, and the jobs are developed on their resources in the developed countries, then we are increasing the gap. Muhammad Yunus mentions this in his speech. It's a Peace Nobel Prize. He mentioned, I have it in Germany, I translated this very hard, now I have it in Germany, but anyhow, say that the income distribution in the world is really a telling story, that 6% of the global population have access to 40% of the global wealth, and that 94% have the rest. And he comes to the conclusion that is not a formula for peace. That is not a formula for peace. And therefore, we cannot come back and say that's their job. If we don't believe that is our job, then we will have very lot of conflicts coming with 9 billion people in this world. And if we are even criticized for decreasing the development potential of others because they have to cope with costs of our value. Believe me, to ask somebody to pay for your well-being is not a signal for good cooperation for the near future. Environment policy is never developing costs. It is deciding who is responsible and when for the cost. It is a distribution policy, totally something else. And therefore, if you want to come to a world with 9 billion people, and we will do so, we really have to ask ourselves what is to do. There are, I believe, at least two very clear differentiated perspectives. There's one direction convinced that there will be always a technical solution for the problems we have in front of us. And if you go a little bit more in the detail of this question, I had the chance to speak in Freiburg in the Frias only some weeks before. If you see this, then you are very close to the knowledge that what we are doing is more or less concentrated to repair the mistakes or the negative consequences of previous activity of human being before. Our wonderful growth is an empty circle because it is linked with the fact that you have to repair the negative consequences you did before. I cannot go in this detail. It is a very interesting part because a lot of people more and more are convinced that therefore we should not speak of a Holocene anymore, but on an Anthropocene. That is a human linked development in this world, in Anthropocene. And that a Nobel Prize laureate like Paul Crutzen, head of the Institute for Chemistry of the Max Planck Institute in Mainz, comes to the conclusion that this needs engineering. He is convinced that an Anthropocene asks us to engineer against the problem we presented before ourselves. So if you discuss climate, you have now three activities possible. You have the one possibility named with mitigation. Change it. The reasons why we have this in relation to changing of climate. The second is adapt to climate change. In the very moment where we accept adaptation, we are already in the engineering, only to make it very clear. And this is not only a climate topic, that is a topic wherever you are. The fact that we made investments in our water bodies, in our rivers, the Rhine is now 60 kilometers shorter than it was by nature, makes now a lot of problem with flooding, and we are coming back and saying we have to engineer it better. We are now constructing polders to bring the water, the flood in, so to decrease the risk for the downstreamers. Engineering. Adaptation by itself is already an engineering structure. It is concentrated to solve the problem of our previous activities. And you can do it, of course, in climate engineering as well. That is a third topic. Please don't smile. It is bloody, bloody hard. There are lots of people thinking about this. I have to inform you that in the Institute I had the chance to start and to be still, at least until September this year, I have to be in the responsibility for the Institute for Advanced Sustainability Studies. We have also one activity linked with climate engineering. Not because we want to promote it, but we want to learn the arguments against it. Why? What is the consequence? I learned that in the Washington Parliament, we have already draft laws for climate engineering. What's going on with feeding the oceans to increase the capacity to fix carbon, CO2? What about the possibility to inject particulates in the atmosphere to change the radiation structure? What about changing the color of the clouds to have another albedo and to reject it better? Not absolutely visionary topics or what have you, no. It is intensively discussed. engineering one solution, one direction. By the way, that goes back to the very beginning of the wording of sustainability. Karl von Clausewitz, this great man, 300 years ago, father of the discussion on sustainability, his book, Silvicultura Economia, he considered if you can only harvest as much of wood as it is growing, he came to the question, which trees are growing fastest? He was engineering. He was, to some extent, the father of the German monoculture of pine tree? Fichten. Das ist der dialektische Ansatz, den wir hier machen. Danke Ihnen, herzlich. Und ich wusste, da ist jemand. Also der Vater der Fichtenmonokulturen. Ist der Vater, ist the father of the sustainability discussion in Germany. 300 years ago, also a topic you can go in much more detail. Therefore, I believe we must be aware again of the distribution effects. We made a conference on this climate engineering in Berlin, a global conference. Lots of people from around the world. There were some of colleagues from Africa, and they came exactly back with the distribution question. I say, it is incredible. You guys, responsible for climate change, you inject something on the global level which has also, if ever, negative consequences for us. So we have again also then to be responsible for the negative consequences of what you are doing now. If you see the history of the fight against the ozone hole, you have exactly the same structure, exactly the same structure. We use in the northern part those chemicals, CFCs, and the destruction of the ozone layer happened in the southern part. And so they have to be responsible for the burden of what we had as an advantage in lower cost, because CFC are more or less a byproduct, very cheap, very good, usable, and nobody want to agree that there might be some interrelation between CFCs and the ozone hole. It was the mentioned Paul Crutzen, together with Molina and Rauland, who were then awarded with a Nobel Prize for exactly this interrelation. So we have again and again the advantages in this field. If we want to have a sustainable development and a peaceful world with 9 billion people, we have urgently to decide to change our habit to externalize the costs of our well-being to others. One sentence. By the way, that is my sentence for sustainability. Be responsible for the medium and long-term consequences of your action. Full stop. Nothing more. And that is a lot. Our former president, Köhler, made a wonderful speech in one of the prize-giving ceremonies for the Deutschen Umweltpreis in Augsburg in those days. I recommend strongly to read the speech. It's, of course, linked with modern information and communication technologies. And he said, we should agree not to live anymore on the expense of other people. A wonderful sentence. I'm a little bit afraid that our citizen, maybe even Töpfer, is not even aware that he lives on the expenses of other people. And which other people? Who is that? Who is that? Hans Jonas, the great philosopher of the principle of responsibility, comes exactly with this. They say, our knowledge should be equivalent to the consequences of our action in time and space. And it is not. And therefore he comes to a wonderful recommendation, what he calls a heuristic of fear. He doesn't speak of angst, but of fear, ehrfurcht. And I think that is the position we have to link
in this.
We can, yes, do a lot here in this country to make sustainable development in 2050 with 9 billion people possible. The one precondition is that we give development chance to those people in the developing world we urgently need to overcome really existing poverty. And what they need for this, very easy, is first and foremost energy. There is no development without energy. I'm an old man now, and I repeat it again and again, but you cannot speak so many times to have any final reaction on this. But there is no other chance. And it is a responsibility of a technologically leading country like Germany to invest in those technologies, even if they are in the very beginning, maybe even on the long term for us too expensive. That's not the criteria. Being 8 years in Africa, you cannot come back and say what they need is first and foremost to prove that we need it here as well. All what we are discussing with regard to research on pharmaceuticals have always this bias in its discussion. Nobody believes that we didn't have already better solutions with regard to malaria. Malaria would be a disease we are confronted with. On the contrary, we are developing pharmaceuticals for diseases we have not yet discovered. They are still unknown, but we are developing this. The United States of America had 6% of the global population, but they have a consumption of the global production of pharmaceuticals of how many percent? A little bit less than 50. 6%, 50% consumption. So you must be aware of this topic as well. That is our responsibility, by the way. Touch wood. We are not only, we believe at least that we are technically and scientifically leading, co-leading, but we have, of course, also a very stable economic basis. Who else shall do it? Who else? And therefore, it is a great contribution to a sustainable development world for 9 billion people. If we can give other solutions for the necessary energy than those we had for our development. We cannot simply come back to those in Africa, in India, in Asia, name them, and say, but look, environment is now full. It's a pity for you, but end of economic development. If you try to mention something like this in Nairobi, in Kenya, you have a problem. And right so, and right so. Therefore, in this year, COP21, COP is adult 21, in this year I will go to Paris because we can offer a new energy technology affordable on the same level as it is with others. If I cannot give them an alternative, what shall they do? And it is a good alternative also with the specific needs they have. And that is a technology not linked with the externalization. You know, I see a lot of icons of the environment, development, environment policy development sitting here, Freiburg, needless to say. These are the icons. They were always criticized. There was a lot of smile when we said, but nuclear is not really cheap. Nuclear is not really cheap. You remember? Nobody was in line when you say, there are lots of other costs. Now we learned yesterday that one of the big companies, or two of the big companies linked with nuclear, come back and say, we have $3 billion deficit. And in the newspaper is this question, can they pay for handling the waste? Only to remind you, to remember, we paid in our price something like the cost for handling the waste. Where is this money gone? Therefore, We have this new technology as an answer for a peaceful, sustainable development in the future for 9 billion people. It is decentralized. Yes, I learned, and that is a disaster, of course, the sun is not shining in the night. Is scientifically proven now. By the way, to come this late afternoon, early evening, with a train to Freiburg, and you see the sunset, and then you are very convinced, you can be optimistic. It was fantastic. And by the way, you see on the other side still a little bit snow on the top of the mountains. Maybe I'm too old, but I'm touched by something like this. And if you are going to a city like Freiburg, where the sun has some additional ingredients, makes the things even better. Now, we have this need to develop the room for the chance that others in this world have a share for making their living. Can we really overcome the question asked in the famous Potsdam Memorandum by Nobel Prize laureates in 2007? Is there a third way between environment destruction and remaining poverty? And this is linked with the question, can we change our energy base? It is not to mention this here because I am in Freiburg. But it is only one topic. We have the same in other fields as well. We have it in water. I cannot mention it often enough. It is wonderful to see that energies have different costs and what have you. It is really until now more or less forgotten that the different technology to produce electricity has a totally different need for water. We just make this happen. Coal power stations are extremely water-intensive power stations. China's problem is not that they don't have enough coal. Yes, they have enough coal, but the coal is more and more in those regions where they don't have the water. And without water is no chance. So to develop technologies for electricity production with less and less water need is a huge challenge. Therefore, we know that wind is more or less water-free. Solar, to some extent, you have to clean. By the way, one of the main problems with what we call the concentrated solar power technology, solar power stations. You remember the discussion on DESERTEC, that we are harvesting the sun in the Maghreb country and bring it to this wonderful continent where we have the consumer. Technology, wonderful. But in the Sahara Desert, you have a lot of sunshine, really, a lot of sunshine, 3,500 hours per year. You know, we have some 900 hours per year. So that's very easy to say, let's go where they have 3,500. That's very, very easy to understand, but unluckily, in the Sahara, they have a lot of sand. And even worse, they have a lot of wind. So, and if you combine wind and sand and mirrors, you come to a problem. And by the way, if you want to have solar power stations, you need something to heat up. That's water. Where is the water coming from? Until now, we don't have a technology not linked with water. I only want to avoid that you are convinced at the end that we are only discussing sustainability with regard to climate change. It would be a mistake. There are lots of other consequences. I mentioned only water. We have to mention, of course, resources. And Ulrich von Weizsäcker is the chairman of the UNEP resource panel. He can speak much better also on this topic and others as well, as I can do it. But it goes without saying that those ideas we had before are in the very moment very economically viable. We were all criticized when we started to say we have to collect separately. You remember the discussion, dual system, green dot, and all these wonderful things. Today, this is named urban mining. Urban mining, a wonderful wording. It's nothing else than to prove that resources are more and more valuable and that you can have new technologies to answer to this. A world with 9 billion people cannot be a sustainable world as a throwaway society. And we are throwing away a lot, not only a red list of endangered species, we have a lot of other throwaway articles. This red list is nothing else than the throwaway nature. All this is not handleable alone with regard to new technologies. And then I come at the end to underline that we have also to consider how we can live a decent life. I'm not asking for Verzicht, but to reconsider what are we verzichten quite now. You can read the same speech I quote von Gross Köhler in Augsburg. We also mentioned, you want to remind us that we are very, very much verzichten with regard to a little bit rest, to be alone, to be with your neighbors, to have some time for yourself. The luxury of the future will be not to be reachable. That will be the luxury of the future. The luxury of the future will be that you have a feeling that you determined yourself and you are not determined by big data or others. That is the Anthropocene 2.0. All this is Verzicht, what we have now. Maybe we can change it a little bit more. And I have a feeling that this is more and more also well known now in lots of discussion in our society. So take it all together. Sustainable development in a world with 9 billion people. You can discuss it a whole semester in the university. I have to apologize that I did it in English. That was a little bit cumbersome. But, you know, better cumbersome than not to come. And therefore it is better to do this. Thank you very much.
Maybe it was an advantage that you had prepared your talk in German, because I think now we got your thoughts much more unfiltered and original than if it would have been in the right language. So thank you so much. We thank all the contributions. And actually, before concluding our meeting tonight, we would like to make an assembly of all the laureates among you here in the audience, and I would love to ask you all to please come up to stage. We would like to take a group photo together with the transparent. So let's enroll the transparency. We are talking about remembering Fukushima, one of the biggest nuclear disasters. So I would like to ask only those laureates who are willing to stand behind this banner. Actually, the banner should be held up, otherwise we cannot see each other. Please come to the stage.